Welcome, everyone, to episode 444 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Dvorak, and we have a great episode for you today. We are going to talk game 5 of the NBA finals. We're going to preview game 6, what the Suns can do to force a game 7. And then, if you listen to our last episode, some big Damian Lillard news was breaking around the time. So we had a couple days to digest it. We are now going to take a deep look into Damian Lillard, the Portland Trail Blazers, and what is next for them. Before we get to all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone who I know has really been just basking in the glow of Space Jam 2 for the last few days. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Mike. God, that was... Look, I'm very glad that that was a kid's movie because I hate that whole idea of men in their 30s sitting there going, well, I think the setting was a little bit too unrealistic. Like, the kids enjoyed it, but that was just straight up a 2-hour commercial and nothing else. But you know what, Brian? Outside of having to bleach my eyes afterwards, that day was still a good day. Because if I ever find myself being world famous, I have now will have the confidence to clap back on Twitter because Kevin Durant is basically just deciding, screw it. I'm going to go at my haters and I'm going to respond to them. I am going on a rampage. I love it. I absolutely love it. I know that you were a little bit... you were never anti-KD, but you were a little like, oh, he's too much in his feelings once in a while. I love this. I love him just clapping back at people. More of that, KD. More of that.
That was highly enjoyable. All of the clips that have leaked... I wasn't like listening in live. I just saw some clips afterward, but all of the clips that came out... Everyone who spoke to him just completely embarrassed themselves. Like, you were trying to explain basketball to Kevin effing Durant. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe take a step back and realize where you are and your place in this conversation. But yeah, that was enjoyable. You know what else was enjoyable more was game 5 of the NBA Finals, unless you're a Phoenix Suns fan, in which case it was probably terrible after the first quarter.
Right, that's why Gerald didn't come on. We were planning on to have Gerald on today, and that's what, you know what, he said intranet issues. Yeah. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, he sabotaged his internet. We will have him on later this week, hopefully to discuss a game 7, knock on wood, or to discuss what's next for both of these teams. But yeah, so the Suns jump out to a huge lead, 16 points at the end of the first quarter. The Bucks battle back right away with Giannis on the bench, which was very impressive. Yeah. And then it is just a back and forth seesaw. The Bucks jump out to a double digit lead in the second half. The Suns take a nice surge late and it is anyone's game with one possession left. And then, you know, Drew Holiday forces a Devin Booker turnover, throws the most audacious alley-oop that you would ever see in that position. Giannis dunks it home and the Bucks are heading home now up 3-2 in the finals with a chance to close it out Tuesday. So, Mort, we talked a lot about the finals with Ty the other day as well. Yeah. We talked a lot about the Bucks adjustments. Now the Bucks have won 3 straight, so I think we should focus more on the Suns today and what they need to do.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of conversation on Twitter throughout the game about Devin Booker, who had his second straight 40-point game. But there was a lot of, like, is he leaning too much into iso ball, not getting his teammates involved enough? What's your take on, you know, the Suns really just their offensive outlook, I guess, especially after that first quarter?
That's interesting. I didn't see that talk because I simply don't have the opportunity to watch the games live at this point. The games tip off at 3 a.m., which is just a little bit too late for me, so I catch them earlier next morning. So all the Twitter live reactions, I am not aware of that. That is a real like criticism right now that he's going to ISO because it's not something that I personally have picked up on watching the games. It's not where I'm sitting going, oh my god, he's being audacious and taking over possessions. So given that I didn't notice that at all. I guess you have my answer there.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, in part, it feels out of necessity because Drew has done such a good job on Chris Paul that, you know, they're putting the ball in Booker's hands earlier and having him orchestrate. And then, like, really, there are three options from that point because Drew is basically, when he's on Chris Paul, he's removing Chris Paul from the play. So you can either, if you're Booker, you can either take the shot yourself, you can try to pass it to Ayton, or you can drive and kick to one of Crowder or Bridges or Cam Johnson, who, you know, whoever's on the floor with you, drive and kick to one of the for an open three-pointer. But
that's actually where I wanted to focus, if anything.
Yeah.
Like the wings.
Yeah.
No, because instead of like putting the fault at Devin Booker's feet, like why is Mikal Bridges shooting less than 10 times per game in this series? Well, why is Jay Crowder?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of, those two things go hand in hand, right? Like, I think people are saying Booker is trying to put too much on his own shoulders, and that's what they want. They want more Mikal Bridges and more Jay Crowder. You know, like, Jay started very hot. I think it was in the second quarter when the Bucks were making that run. He missed two in a row and then just kind of disappeared offensively for the rest of the night.
But I think that's more of a scheme thing than it's a Booker thing. I mean, we're seeing them clear everything out. Mm-hmm. And then Booker is and that's a play for him. And whether he shoots or he makes a pass, that is the creative freedom that he has. And I think he's making the most of those situations. I think the Bucks are staying home on these guys, like Jay and Mikal a lot. But what I want to see is how do you get them open? Like you asked me last time we recorded, what should the Suns do to free up Chris Paul? Well, now I want to, you know, talk about that just with Jay and with Mikal instead, because you need those guys to have big games. You need them to shoot a little bit more. You need to keep it a little bit more honest. Also, Ayton, I feel, is being a little bit underutilized offensively now. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are definitely minutes on the court where I sit there and going, they should get him some deep post touches.
Yeah.
Because it's there, and instead they're just trying to work it out to the corners instead. I don't know if they're just, I don't want to use the word afraid. I don't think if you're in the NBA Finals, you're afraid of anything. That's but I think they are maybe a little bit less enthused about getting into the paint because you have a Brook Lopez, you have a Giannis who definitely can go from the top of the free throw line down to the low block in a matter of half a second. You have Chris Middleton with long arms. So there's just a lot of activity around the rim. So maybe that's just a result of them trying to avoid the middle.
Yeah. There was the one possession in the fourth quarter, and I think Mark Jackson afterward was like, that's just a bad possession. Whereas it was like Ayton trying to create on his own. And, it's a close game. The Suns are trying to, like, mount this comeback, and you know, Ayton catches the ball at the elbow and is like trying to create one-on-one against Brook Lopez, which is a bad possession. You're right. Like if you're trying to get Ayton going, I agree he needs to be more involved offensively. You want to get him where he can just catch and shoot basically, or like make a very quick decision. The more time that he has the ball in his hands, the less time I feel good about that actual possession going well.
I agree.
I think you're right about it. It just feels like the Bucks, like the story of this entire series right now is the Bucks size has really started to overwhelm Phoenix. Like they've really started to figure out we're just bigger than these dudes. And now Bud, you know, Jeff Teague was a abomination in the first half of that game because he came in because Drew Holiday got in foul trouble with a minus 11 in 8 minutes, and then Bud just excised him from the rotation. And we started to see these like supersized lineups with Giannis, Bobby Portis, and Brook Lopez all on the floor together. And as we talked about, as soon as Dario went down, you know, the Suns just don't have a ton of big guys. Like they know, you've got some wings in Crowder and Bridges, and Johnson is Johnson's their second biggest player right now, right? And he's not like a burly, rugged big man. So it's like...
No, he's long 6'8".
Yeah. So, I mean, I know the rebounding battle was pretty even last night, but it feels like the Bucks tend to come up with big offensive rebounds in particular at key moments. And it seems like the Suns are just being deterred because of the Bucks' size. They are being deterred from going into the paint. So they are taking just a ton of jump shots, and they are a great jump shooting team. So, you know, make or miss league. Like, we could, a few possessions go one way or the other, and the Suns could be up 3-2 in this series. The Suns could have won this series. You know, game four was just as close. But yeah, I mean, it's something that they need to figure out going into game six. And I don't know what the answer is other than, you know, undo time and have Dario not tear his ACL in game one.
Right. It's amazing to me how the Suns right now are losing this series. They're almost as a team at 50-40-90. They're at 50-40-86. So I think it's fair to say that the offense just isn't a problem. Like, as a team, they have a true shooting percentage of 60.4. Like, I just cannot put it at the feet of their offense.
Yeah.
It's like they are generating the right looks, the right shot amounts. Like, you, maybe late game execution is a thing. Maybe there is like times where the Bucks just assert themselves, but I think a lot of it also just comes down to how to phrase this, because it's not hunger or willingness. Both of these teams are hungry. Both of these teams want it. I hate that whole mantra of one team wanted it more. I don't think it boils down to that. But I do think the Bucks may be a little bit more experienced. They haven't been in the finals before, this is true, but they have made somewhat deep playoff runs before. Yeah. They have accustomed to the playoffs. It seems like they just know which buttons to press late in games after being shocked in game two, I think, by just, you know, losing that one. I think they expected to come in game two and be more competitive than they actually ended up being. So I think now they lock themselves in. They're doing something that just is deterring Phoenix from getting to the right spots late in games, and we're seeing the results of it. What I love, though, is the adjustments and counter adjustments. I mean, this has been a game of chess. We should really take a minute just to appreciate just the level of quality that we're seeing. Even when we're sitting here talking about how can Phoenix fix this, this and that. Okay, that aside, like, it's not big issues because both of these teams are playing fantastic basketball. I mean, we have not had a game without a 40-point performance since game one.
Yeah.
We have had, what, 5 40-pointers since then?
Yeah.
2 in the same game. Back-to-back 40 performances by Giannis, and back-to-back 40-pointers from Devin. This is brilliant basketball. We're seeing switching. We're also seeing old-school basketball with guys scoring in the paint, which has really nullified all the old guns, like, in the NBA atmosphere. Like, oh, the game is all perimeter. All they're doing is jacking threes. If you're still of that opinion, go watch the 2021 NBA Finals, because that is not true. This has just been a phenomenal brand of basketball all throughout the first five games. And, you know, we can sit here and split hairs and going, well, should Devin pass a little bit more? What can they do? Should we get Mikal Bridges a little bit more involved? At the end of the day, these are just marginal decisions, which, yeah, could make a difference. But, I mean, they're playing really well, all things considered. I mean, after watching every game, I'm left with a positive image of the Suns. I just think Milwaukee played better.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well. It wasn't, Phoenix's offense was not necessarily the problem last night. It was like after the first quarter, it just felt like they could not get a stop in the second or the third quarter at all. Like, I'm sure Milwaukee did not score on every single trip down the floor, but it felt like they did.
It certainly felt like it, yeah.
And it felt also, like, you know, about what can Phoenix do to fix this, like, it is not to take away anything from Milwaukee. Milwaukee's playing incredibly good defense. Like, I think that needs to be said. What, you know, Phoenix has been a buzzsaw offensively throughout these playoffs, and I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden they are struggling to generate efficient offense. Even, you know, yeah, Booker's had back-to-back 40s, but, like, the degree of difficulty on a lot of his shots is absurd. He's just that good of a player that he's still able to make them. But it's not like, you know, they're slicing. Like, in game one, they destroyed the Bucks' defense. Ever since then, you know, game two, they just rained hellfire from three. But, you know, that was still, the Bucks played better defensively in game two. And really, I mean, this is a perfect way to seg into it. We need to have a Drew Holiday appreciation minute here, because I mean, that was what we were talking about with Ty going into Game 5. Like, ideally, Drew Holiday would not shoot 4 of 20 from the field. Like, he could start making open layups. He started making open layups last night. We had the Drew Holiday game that Bucks fans have been waiting for. 27 points, 13 assists. Makes the, you know, the game-saving defensive play as well. Like, this, there was a lot, you know, did the Bucks overpay for Drew Holiday? Probably. Might they regret that extension? Possibly. Is it going to matter when they are one game from a title if they win this thing? No, they don't care. Like, this is why you trade for Drew Holiday. Anyone who thought Drew Holiday was only a marginal upgrade over Eric Bledsoe and, like, you can't give up 5 first-round picks for a guy who's only made an all-star to game like 7 years ago. Yes, you can, because he's going to come up with, even when his offense isn't there, which it wasn't in game 4, his defense, taking Chris Paul out of this series, has been worth the price of admission. Then game 5, adding the offense on top of his already elite defense, he's been phenomenal, and it's awesome to see.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, overall, it's been a subpar series for him offensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, but defensively, he's been outstanding, and it carried them to a point where everything he gave you offensively was just cream, and then he had this explosion last night, which was just, I mean, what the hell could Phoenix do in that endeavor, right? I mean, like you said, in game 2, it was Phoenix just raining hail fire from 3. Well, last night, it was Milwaukee just, not necessarily for free, but everywhere. I mean, they were just so competent all over. By the way, for those on YouTube watching, there's a fly around the camera. I apologize. It is warm. It is very warm here in Copenhagen right now. So they seek insight. But no, you're absolutely right. He had one of those great games last night, and he can just give the Bucks 60% of what he did offensively last night in game 6. Then that trophy is going to Milwaukee.
Yeah. So let's move into game 6. When we recorded last, the Suns were still technically favored, presumably because they had home court advantage. But as we noted at the time, it felt like Milwaukee had swung momentum their way. Well, now up 3-2 going back home for game 6. The odds have flipped as well, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. The Bucks are now a -390 favorite to win the NBA championship. The Suns are a +330. So it seems like bettors, honestly, it seems like they're expecting this thing to be over in 6. The Bucks are a 5-point favorite in game 6 as well. How do you see this thing playing out? Like, I asked this question before game 5. Like, do the Suns just need to go back to the drawing board? Or it doesn't really feel like that, right? Like, the games have been so close, but how do the Suns get over the hump that they haven't been able to in these last 2 games?
You know, that it's gut check time, so I don't think it's going to boil down much to the X's and O's. Mm-hmm. These guys have played 5 games. I don't know how many minutes. I mean, you look at Devin Booker. He's been on the court for 195 minutes. I think these teams are now accustomed to each other, and they know what they want. Every card has been played. I would definitely be shocked if it hadn't, because at this point, you got to give it everything that you've got. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's as much about tactics and all that. This is about coming out and making shots. This is about coming out and matching every move that there's made by doing something else. So you can't let Milwaukee get out to like a 7-0 run to start the games. You can't, in the middle of a random first quarter, let them have a 10-0 run. Like, you have to be on top of them every single time. You have to execute, whatever that means. If that's layups, if that's mid-range pull-ups, if it's threes, does not matter. It's simply a question of limiting what the Bucks are doing and trying to respond. That is all you have right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which sounds very emotional, but I mean, that's also how it is. I mean, you can't remember how, NBA teams, when they prepare, they have like 3 or 4 sentences on the whiteboard before games. It's not like an essay that players have to remember. Mm-hmm. I would imagine a game like this where emotions will be on their sleeves, it's like one sentence. Like, it's one key element. Like,
yeah.
Stop transition or something like that. Right. It's going to be very simple.
Or just as simple as, like, execute. Just execute your offense or execute your defense. Yeah. Like, know your assignments and just do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to ask about this because I noticed this when I was looking earlier today. So right now, for finals MVP, Giannis, to absolutely no one's surprise, is the favorite at minus 430.
Oh, gasp.
I guess it's switched. Earlier today, Chris Paul was favored over Devin Booker. Mm. Now it's Devin Booker is over. So Chris Paul is now he was a plus 700. Now he's plus 700. Before he was plus 650, Devin Booker was plus 700, but those have flipped. And, like, I didn't understand that at all. And I honestly don't even understand it being as close as it is there. Like, I feel like if the Suns are going to win this thing, if they come back and win the series, you know, Devin Booker had a bad game three, but Chris Paul, like, had a great game one, pretty good game two. Mm-hmm. Bad game three, bad game four, off and on game five. Like, it's hard for me to, other than the narrative, Chris Paul, first ring, blah, blah, blah. Like, based on what's happened so far, I don't understand Devin Booker not being far ahead if Phoenix is going to win. Like, he seems like he's the clear-cut MVP choice.
Right. I think you and I actually said that the one scenario would be if Devin goes off and averages 40, which he's done over the past two. But you're right about the game last night. I mean, when you look at the box score, Chris was 21 points, 11 assists, 9 of 15 from the field, 3 of 3 from downtown. I feel that stat line is a little bit misleading. Because when you watch the game, it did not feel as though that was, like, you know, it's difficult to quantify, but you didn't feel as though he was that much in control as the stat line indicated. So I agree with you. That I would actually go as far as saying that his game five was average, despite the very elite line, which is insane when you really think about it, because the defense wasn't really there. He didn't really step up when he needed to. I think it's fair to say that right now, if the Suns are going to come back, it's probably Devin's. However, if they come back and win two games in a row here, and it's Chris Paul leading the way, playing like MVP caliber basketball, then I can definitely see that swing back in his favor. I don't think this is a dead race by any chance.
Yeah, I don't either. I just thought, given what's happened so far, I didn't think it should be as close as it is. But I'm with you, of course. If Chris Paul, you know, if Devin Booker has two bad games, Chris Paul has two great games, and the Suns end up winning the series, obviously it goes to Chris Paul. It's just... And you're right about game five. It feel like he started well, ended well, but in those middle two quarters where the Bucks went on their run, I mean, that, I guess it's another time where the Twitter narrative might have influenced his thinking, but a lot of people were asking, like, what's wrong with Chris Paul? And, I mean, one, he has torn ligaments in his wrist, so he is injured.
He had the shoulder early in the playoff. There's a lot wrong.
He had COVID a couple weeks ago too. Like, he's basically a walking infirmary at this point.
Right.
But too, I mean, Drew Holiday, again, it goes back to Drew Holiday. Yeah. He is that good. He is that guy defensively. And they are just putting, it's like whoever they put Drew on, you're just gonna have a bad time. And Chris Paul has been getting the Drew assignment more. They switched Drew on to Booker for a while last night, but then they put him right back on Chris Paul in the fourth quarter. I think it's been really smart of Bud, which I did not expect to say very much in these finals, but honestly...
he's had a good finals.
Yeah, he really had. The adjustments he's been making in terms of his rotation, the, you know, leaning into their size, putting Drew on Chris is not rocket science. And, you know, put your best defender on their best guard or on their like head of the snake. But it really has taken Chris out of the game to an extent that we haven't seen yet really in these playoffs. And it goes back to, you know, sure, Devin can roast you. He can drop 40, but, you know, he ended up with three assists. Like, if you can make them go into more isolation and not beat you with their pick and rolls and their rotations, then they're not going to force you into defensive breakdowns. Like, if they beat you with difficult shot making, so be it. You have to live with it. You can't stop everything. But you don't want to have, you know, them executing their sets at such a high efficiency that they are creating wide open looks for a Mikal Bridges, where he is taking 10 shots a game, six of which from three, four or five of which he'll hit. So, yeah, I think, you know, the what's wrong with Chris Paul narrative is I still think it's dumb. And if they end up losing this series, it's going to suck. But I, you know, I don't want that to be a referendum. Like, oh, this is Chris Paul choking in the playoffs again. No, this is just a really good defensive team putting the clamps on him.
You're right. I mean, and you, by the way, you work for Bleacher Report, so I'm looking forward to if the Suns lose, you guys will probably be the first outlet to come up and say, you know what, Chris Paul shouldn't get 3 years, $100 million.
It's definitely coming. Yeah. I have pre-wrote a piece pretty much before the finals started about guys who have earned themselves a lot more money in the playoffs. And Chris Paul was on there because I did not think it was realistic for him to decline that $44.2 million player option. And, you know, he's reportedly going for a three-year $100 million contract. That seemed lofty at the time. Now it doesn't. I mean, regardless of what happened, like him getting the Suns to this point, if Phoenix doesn't pay, the Knicks will. Someone will. So he was on there, and I'm not going to change it. Like, regardless of what happens, he's earned himself that kind of cash, and I don't think the Suns should have any real hesitation in paying him.
No, I agree. I agree.
Because what's the alternative, I guess, is the... We'll go into it.
Jeff Teague.
Oh, God. Yeah.
No, but one thing is, it's also interesting just in terms of the financial components, because there's another guy on Phoenix who definitely will get a raise, and that's Cameron Payne.
Yep.
But I think his play in the finals may have seen his value drop just a little bit. Like, I remember going after the conference finals, like, this guy could get like 15, 16 million a year from some team. I after the finals here, I think that is probably a little bit too much. He looked like his trajectory was going the right way, and then, like, he's been okay, but he hasn't had that, you know, that steady level of consistency where you go, oh yeah, he's been reliable every single game. Let me look it over. Has he had one game in double figures?
I think game one.
Game one with 10. Yeah. So barely. So one game there from, and there he's been pretty inconsistent since then. So that might be an X factor for game six. Like, him coming in off the bench and getting the offense going and hitting some open shots and moving the ball and doing something, that might actually be one of those crucial elements.
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually on that list of players who earned it as well, but I agree with you. It feels like non-taxpayer mid-level feels like...
Yeah. Like the nine and a half, roughly.
Right,
yeah.
Like somewhere in the 4 years, it'll be a little over 40 million. Like 4 years, 45 million, somewhere around there. That seems...
That's a good contract for campaign. Yeah. That's generational wealth.
All right, He earned $2 million this year. Like, that's still a huge raise for him, but... Yeah, I would hesitate. I don't think he's at the point where I would trust him as one of the best backup point guards in the NBA. I don't think you want him as your starting point guard if you have legitimate title aspirations.
No, not if you have title. No, you're right. But I do think there are certain teams out there that might have scoring guards who are looking at Payne going, if he could become a steady, reliable point guard, then why not?
You're just hoping the Bulls don't overpay Dennis Schroeder. See you.
Oh, well, that is one thing. I'm not even talking about them necessarily, but just, I mean, we're seeing the whole backcourt ideology developing from this postseason run with the Suns, right? Like, when you have dynamic guards who can score the ball at a high clip, you need guys who can come in and facilitate a little bit while also creating their own shots. I mean, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell is another example in Utah. So I think there might be some teams out there going, we have this explosive guard. We have someone who can really put the ball in the basket. So if we can have a point guard next to this guy who can maximize his efficiency or whatever, then they might go for it. But we'll see. I mean, look, Free agency is not it is not far away, Brian. It is about 2 weeks away.
That's true. Well, since you brought up explosive scoring guards, Mort, we have to now turn back to Damian Lillard.
Did that for a reason, Brian. It's called a segue.
I like it. I like it. So, yeah, on Friday, as we were recording with Ty, that's when the report came out from Henry Abbott of True Hoop that Damian Lillard planned to request a trade in the coming days. Shortly after we hopped off came the interview with Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, in which he did everything but request a trade. He made it very clear that the status quo is no longer good enough for him. He said the loss to Denver in particular is where he realized, I want to get this quote exactly right. He said, "I just walked away from that really disappointed. I was like, man, this just isn't going to work." He also said, We're at the stage as a team where all, not just me, not just my teammates, not just our new coaching staff, the front office, everybody in this organization must look in the mirror because we've constantly come up short. We have to look in the mirror and say, I have to be better because whatever it is we're doing is not working and it's not giving us the shot to compete on the level that we want to compete on. So that was just a giant middle finger to Neil O'Shea, which is a completely deserved thing at this point. He did speak
for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, right. Correct. He did speak with reporters at Team USA practice later Friday and made it clear that he thinks he's going to be in a Blazers uniform this upcoming season. He said, "Right now, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. What I can say is my intentions and my heart have always been set on being in a Trailblazers uniform for my entire career." Which is, that's typical Dame. That's exactly the, "I'm not sure what I'm going to do" is new for him, but he has been very clear over the years. He doesn't want to leave Portland. He's loyal. He loves it there. He's never hedged to the extent that he just did when he said, "But I think over time you want to win it all. And I want to win it all in a Trailblazers uniform, but we all have to be making strides toward that."
Do you think that that article was written by Dame himself and then just delivered to Haynes?
It felt that way.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Chris Haynes and Dame go back. Like, if you want sourced news about Portland, Chris Haynes is the guy to do it. So they go back a long time, and you know Dame trusts him. So if, again, like when that trade request comes, Chris is going to be the one to break it most likely. Or he's going to have
that's not going to be Vogue or Shams. Nope, you're right.
Or he's going to have the quotes about why he's doing it and where he wants to go, whatever the case may be. You know, he's the one who got the interview where he said he wanted Kidd or Billups in the first place. But given all of that, the True Hoop thing, the Haynes interview, the comments from Team USA, where do you think that leaves Portland? Like, how should Portland be approaching this offseason now knowing Dame is clearly not happy? He hasn't requested a trade publicly. We don't know what's happened in behind the scenes, but hasn't yet requested one publicly. But he sounds more uncertain about his future with the Blazers than he ever has before.
See, this is where I wish that my audio mixer had a sound of an explosion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this should be all she wrote. I think it's time, regardless whether he asks out or not. I think, and I realize some people will actually find that comment ridiculous because they're thinking if he doesn't ask out, let's just milk that situation for all it's worth. And fair, but like the trajectory right now is not going to go the right way. Everything is working against them.
Right.
It's pretty clear as well through other interviews that he's done or sourced content with Haynes that he's also very much interested in seeing the rest of the roster get, you know, flipped over. So, you know, he's 31 as well. If you're expecting a roster to go over a significant turnover, you know, you're probably going to have to wait around just a little bit before you get the chemistry down and you can make a finals run, for example, because what kind of upgrades are out there when your best trade assets outside of Dame himself is CJ McCollum, who, and that's not to speak ill of CJ, I really like CJ, but that's the one guy you can get something potentially good from, and he's even on a contract that isn't necessarily fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder, where is all that trade upside? Like, Norman Powell would have to be a sign-and-trade, because he's a free agent, and look, if a team out there offers him a good deal right off the bat, he'll take that. He's unrestricted, so the Blazers can't even do anything to keep him on board. I don't know, man. This seems like if there's a time for him to look at other possibilities, it's now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think for him, it makes sense, because I don't see any way that Portland retools its roster and becomes a championship contender. I just don't think they have the pieces they need. They've given up too much. They've missed too many times. Like, every team makes mistakes. You know, they're not... Yep. I don't want to, like, portray Neil Olshey as some bumbling idiot who's screwed up 100 times. Like, every team screws up 100 times. But at a certain point, those mistakes add up, and they compound over time. So...
Yeah.
The Allen Crabbe contract, the Evan Turner contract, the Myers Leonard contract, trading two firsts for Robert Covington, signing Derek Jones to this, you know, the 2-year non-taxpayer last year. They add up over time. Zach Collins getting hurt sucks, but, you know, they traded two picks they could have used on, like, John Collins and Kyle Kuzma or something, or, like, Derek White, you know.
Right.
And he's just been hurt, and they haven't gotten much out of him. But right now, they are at a pretty natural pivot point, because Covington's heading into the last year of his deal. Nurkic is heading into the last year of his deal. If Jones picks up that player option, he's only signed for one more year. The only players they have under contract beyond this season are Dame, CJ, and Nasir Little.
Yeah.
So this is like a completely blank slate if you want to rebuild. But you run the risk if you're, like, trying to make Dame happy and you're trying to maximize your win-now window. You're going to have to overpay Norman Powell to keep him around. You could keep Covington and Nurkic, but then... or you could try to trade them. Maybe you get something that fits better around them. Maybe you could beef up your defense a little bit. Mm-hmm. But both of those guys are expiring after this year. So if you don't trade either one of them, you could lose them for nothing. They're already not going to give Zach Collins the qualifying offer, so he's going to be a restricted free agent. Like, I just don't see a way in which they retool to the extent they need to get on the level of LA, Denver, Phoenix, Milwaukee, right. Brooklyn. So it's like, I'm with you. Now, even if Dame hasn't asked for the trade, it just feels like now is the time to do it, because if you try to retool your roster, if you overpay Norman Powell to keep him there, and then Dame requests a trade in 6 months or a year, now you're just stuck with Norman Powell. Like, what good is that going to do when you don't have Damian Lillard? Like, he doesn't make sense for your timeline anymore. If you trade Dame, then you could just tear this entire thing down and trade CJ, trade Covington, trade Nurkic, don't re-sign Powell. You know, like, you have nothing left. And it's going to be a really bleak year for you, but you'll survive.
I mean, you'll have picks if you send out Dame. You'll have plenty of picks.
Yeah, you'll have every pick under the sun. Like, you'll have picks for the next 7 years. Like, that's another thing. If you're trading Covington, McCollum, Nurkic, and you're trying to get an upgrade, you can't put picks in that package. Knowing what you know about Dame and that he could leave in a year, you can't, unless they're like heavily protected, lottery protected, top 20 protected, maybe, but you can't give up a top 5 protected pick or something like that.
The Blazers have no draft picks this year.
Yeah. And they have given up 4 of their next 5 second rounders too, right?
Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah. Yeah, 21, 23, 24, 25, all gone. God. They have nothing. They have nothing to rebuild around even. Like, they are starting from complete scratch here if they do trade Dame.
I can't help but ask, and of course, I'm not saying that the Pistons should do this at all.
But
Jeremy Grant is at, like, what, 27, I want to say?
Yeah.
Dame is 31, like, that aligns.
Oh, God.
But no, I wouldn't do it. But right. I think it's a fun thought exercise, if anything. Like, what would the Dame Grant duo do in the East? Second round, max,
yeah,
maybe.
Right, yeah, okay. Maybe.
I don't know, but either way, I mean, if you can include picks this year as long as you then do it after the free agency period.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just carry over. But you're right. Like, moving forward, it would have to be draft picks. I don't see why the Blazers would take on, like, prime guys. That just doesn't make sense. Like, established players for Dame, it should be a non-starter.
Right.
Like, rookies, draft picks, young guys with upside who are extremely young, go for it. Hell, Orlando's been missing a point guard for years. They have two lottery picks and a lot coming as well. So, I mean, why not? And they have young guys. Cole Anthony.
Yeah. Jonathan Isaac.
Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they should do it, but they could put together a package if they were really interested. Markelle Fultz.
See, this,
bring him back
Markelle
to the
Fultz.
Pacific Northwest.
That's where he left his jump shot.
Right, yeah, maybe he'll find it.
Oh, God, that's mean. Sorry, Markelle. No, but no, I hear you. But see, that's actually an interesting discussion, too. Like, we just brought up Detroit and Orlando, two teams that have just sucked for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us are going, no, they shouldn't. They should rather go with the picks.
Yeah.
Is that feels off to me that we both came to that conclusion given how good Dame is. Or is that just because of his age? Is that what's scaring us a little bit, I think?
No, I just think it's the age and, like, the timeline that he's on. I mean, that's right. Yeah, let's circle back to that in a minute too, because that's another part of this conversation is if they do decide to trade Dame, do you have to take his, if he comes up with a list and says, I only want to go to, you know, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Heat, whatever.
Right.
Do you have to oblige him and only take offers from those teams? Or are you, as Portland, just trying to get the best deal possible and you don't really care where he wants to go?
Yeah, that's a tough one. our DM group definitely had 150 DM exchange about this.
Right, which is why I bring it up, because it was more controversial than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. I think you want to do right by him to a certain extent. I don't think you cater to him. I don't think if Dame gives you a list of one team, you just go, okay, so what's the best deal we can get for that one team?
Right.
Like, I don't think that's in play. I don't think that's fair, because then you're just playing against a stacked deck. And that's not... I support player empowerment, but I also think that at some point, if players with plenty of years left on their contracts can just dictate their next moves, then what are we doing? Then we can might as well get rid of trades and free agency. I mean, then it's a soccer system all over, which, I mean, I don't like that. I think there's a reason why people are upset at big clubs over here in Europe when it comes to soccer, because they can just buy the best players every single time. So I think you need to make sure that the system still upholds. There's a reason that the NBA has parity. It is because they want to make sure that every team has a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen to Dame and I go, where do you want to go? And if he gives me a list of one team, I'm going to tell him, expand that list.
Yeah.
Like, I can't work with. Give me 5, 6, 7, 8 teams at the very least. Because, look, this is not going to fly. We're going to have to find some middle ground here. And so the one thing, obviously, is do you do this to satisfy his agency?
Right.
Because what if that agency has clients down the line? You can't think like that all the time. You just can't. I mean, you're an NBA organization. Your goal is to win. And if you're spending half your time thinking about how to please agencies, I think that's a difficult balancing act. Not saying that, you know, there isn't that whole subsection of you scratch my back, I scratch yours. I get it, but it's, you still have to work under what's best for you in the long term. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I would use it as like kind of a tiebreaker, or I would maybe even take a slightly worse deal if it was like Minnesota versus Miami, let's say. And Dame wants to go to Miami, doesn't want to go to Minnesota. I'm not saying Miami and Minnesota can cobble together.
Right, right. It's a theoretical. Yeah.
Because Miami can't. But
they cannot.
But if they, you know, if they could, and I wanted, because you do, I do think you have to take maybe not the agency in mind, but just your perception around the league. Like the last thing you want to do is piss Damian Lillard off to the extent that he goes, you know, burns every bridge on his way out of town and tells people, don't sign with this team moving forward. You can't trust them. You can't trust ownership. You know, who cares about Neil O'Shea? He's not going to survive this rebuild anyway. But like, you can't trust, you know, and they, maybe they sell the team and like it's just totally start from scratch. But until they do, and if they're trying to sell the team and you're pissing off Damian Lillard and he's telling players not to sign there, team valuation goes down. So there's a lot of competing interests in mind, but I do think you have to at least slightly factor it in. But I'm with you. Like, I wouldn't take, if it's like the Lakers are offering Kyle Kuzma and a pick and, you know, some nothing other team. Else. Yeah, New Orleans is offering 9 first round picks and Brandon Ingram.
Right.
You take New Orleans' offer and you say,
yes,
have fun, eat some gumbo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I totally agree with you that if it's, if it comes down to maybe a single protected first round pick or something of that sort, you can sacrifice that if it's the reputation. Although, I kind of, when you think about it, the Blazers have a get out of jail free card here. Because let's say O'Shea makes that deal and afterwards he's fired, there's an organizational overhaul, then that new management team can come in and go, well, we didn't make that trade.
Yeah.
We're trying to flip the page. So the, if players and agencies are going, well, you screwed us. Like, nope, we didn't.
Right.
Our guys did.
Right,
we're new
right,
guys. Right. So there is, like, that, that I think plays in, because I know for a fact that there are a lot of players and agencies that just did not want part of the guardbacks pools, for example.
Mm, yeah.
Who are now very much open to working with Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley. So again, perception can change based on who is in charge in front offices. So like that could be applied. That could be a smart play. Just, no, Neil, we're going to give you a golden handshake on your way out when you trade Dame to the best return. Then we're going to fire you, and then we're going to pivot into being, oh, a rebranded franchise.
Right. And you have to ask, yeah, I mean, maybe that is the play. Like, do you want to you could say, do you want Neil O'Shea making this deal if you're not going to have him oversee the rebuild? But maybe that's the counterpoint.
That's a good question.
But maybe that's the counterpoint is, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, you can go both ways there. Like, because
you're right.
If you want O'Shea to oversee it, then he might, knowing he is just on, not even the hot seat, like the volcano inferno seat, he might try to trade Dame for guys who can help win now. Whereas I'm with you. If you're trading Dame, who gives a damn? Oh, yeah. Like, every pick, all young players, like, let's OKC this thing up, baby. Like, you know, you got to just start from square one, absolutely. So does Dame have, or does O'Shea have the franchise's best long-term interest in mind, or is he just trying to save his own ass?
Oh, the latter, for sure. I mean, or, well, I don't know. When you said that, did he take a swig of water? Look, I, at the end of the day, man, I like Dame. So I also want to see him happy. That's not, I mean, I just have to speak on what teams should be trying to accomplish. Obviously, a player would try to direct his own, you know, create his own path, rather. And that's admirable. Like, I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying that I don't understand that. Of course I do. but it's a team's responsibility to ultimately put the best product on the floor. Maybe not immediately, but 5 years down the line, you're rebuilding. And if there's a deal there that just gives you a plethora of picks, young guys with tremendous upside, and there's a different deal that you're sort of forced into where you're getting like a couple of in-prime players and protected first-rounders, what the hell does that do for you? Then that five-year rebuild is going to take 10. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to ask for an entire fan base, an entire organization. Then that rebuild is going to start paying off when Dame is in his 40s.
Right.
At that point, you just... I think we've reached the level of absurdity when it comes to, you know, coddling players. I fully agree that they need to be taken care of. I fully agree that they're the main product. I fully agree that they need to be prioritized and their feelings should be considered. Absolutely. But you also can't do it at the compromise of your own organization 10 years down the line. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't. That's just running a bad business.
So let's get into some potential destinations. Again, just hypothetically, if they are... to at least listen to offers. Not even definitely trade him this offseason, but like entertain it and don't hang up immediately if teams come calling.
Right.
Who fits the bill of a team that should be trying to get Dame and has... everyone should be trying to get Dame, but who has the right mix of assets for Portland's perspective?
Charlotte.
Oh!
A deal starting with LaMelo Ball.
Wow. That's interesting.
That gets them into the conversation immediately.
Yeah,
if the first thing that is said in that phone call is LaMelo Ball is on the table.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm listening. I realize that the Hornets would have to do a lot of finagling around that because it would eventually lead with a core of like Dame, Gordon Hayward, and... they'll probably retain one of PJ Washington and Miles Bridges. Mm-hmm. I don't think both, which is, it's not bad per se, but like you'd still need to add something to that to make them, you know, an Eastern Conference playoff or Eastern Conference Finals candidate, for example.
Right.
But you can throw in picks in that situation. There are young guys on this roster that you can throw in. There are, hell, if you want to, you can even add in Terry Rozier and like reroute him somewhere else so you get additional draft compensation somewhere from a different team. Like, there's just so many variables here that you can play at, but I think the Charlotte Hornets actually makes more sense than a lot of other teams. Like, for example, people are talking about Miami, people are talking about these major market brands. Like, don't tell me that the Miami Heat can outbid the Charlotte Hornets because they can't.
Yeah, I mean, if LaMelo is on the table, definitely not.
Assuming that, of course. I mean, right. that is what everything stands on. And I understand LaMelo has a great future ahead of him. I'm not saying otherwise. He was Rookie of the Year for a reason. He had an outstanding first year. But, I mean, it's Dame.
Yeah.
That's the one... like, that's a guy you at least have a conversation about internally to flip LaMelo for, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question from Charlotte's perspective is, is the roster that will be left with right. If you trade LaMelo, trade Terry, trade one of Bridges and Washington, trade all your picks, the leftover of Hayward, Lillard, Bridges, Washington, is that enough to compete right now to justify the cost of giving up LaMelo in particular?
Well, they have Devontae Graham, who's a restricted free agent, and because his salary was a minimum, his cap hold is virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was increased because he made, what's the start of the minutes criteria? Yeah. So what do you have that?
I think it's $4.7 million.
But that's chump change.
Yeah, yeah. He'll earn more than nothing. That. Whatever his next contract is, he'll make more.
Exactly. So they can go into restricted free agency, they can re-sign him, they can do a sign-and-trade, and figure something out of that long, I mean, of that nature to fill out that roster a little bit, they will have some opportunities. But yeah, it won't be a year one, loaded roster example, but they will have something. And if the one they left over of PJ Washington and Miles Bridges, that person could also get flipped for something. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect at all. I'm just saying that if a team out there has the balls to do something that could be interesting, it would be the Hornets. Like, they can come in and muck things up. If they don't care about any list that Dame produces to the Trailblazers, they could come in and really just mess things up for everyone else by putting that offer on the table.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think it would be smart of them to do it, but...
Maybe not. I'm just saying that could be... They're desperate, right? I mean, they're desperate to make something out of this. They want to make the playoffs. They want to be relevant.
They shouldn't be that. After landing LaMelo, the desperation right. should be gone.
I get that, but you know how the NBA works, though. Yeah. Sometimes it's the instant gratification. Like, Gordon Hayward fits Dame's timeline as well. Not saying they're a realistic candidate, but yeah. I do think that they can present an offer that is very, very interesting. And I think we need to consider that. We need to consider teams that can make the offer. Whether or not they should or whether or not they will, that's an entirely different conversation. But in terms of what Portland would be looking for, that kind of offer would fit the bill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can look at, you know, like the Cavaliers could offer... Shit, you can do Sexton and Garland at that point. You know, mm-hmm. or Sexton, number three pick.
Three, yeah, that's a good one.
Kevin Love, just for the salary match.
And, salary. To bring him back to Oregon. See, that, now we're thinking, see, like, if some of these teams are willing to get in on the action by completely ignoring what's on Dame's list, they could make this interesting.
Yeah.
They could walk away with Damian Lillard, who has another 4 years left on his contract. And you know what? Dame is not the type of dude who won't show up to training camp.
No. Yeah. He would make these teams better, mm-hmm. but he's not going to be happy. Like, if his goal is, I want to compete for a championship, and the right. Charlotte Hornets or the Cleveland Cavaliers trade away Agreed. Most of their pieces to get him, he will be no closer to competing for a championship. He will be further away, most likely. Maybe closer because they're in the East. That is the only reason he would be closer. But like,
see, now you said it, the East. That is why I brought it up as well, because I think that's the interesting part. The Eastern Conference is still a little bit volatile.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do some things. And I actually don't think that a Hornets team with Dame and Gordon Hayward and one of Bridges or Washington and whoever you flip them for, or whoever you flip Devontae Graham for, I don't think that's a team that's necessarily bad. I mean, it depends on who you get, but if that's a second round team right off the bat, that's longer than what they did this year in Portland.
Yeah. I guess that is one way to look at it. That's true.
No, I get it. He wants to win a ring. Well, yeah. I mean, Brian, at the end of the day, and this is something we need to talk about, there's one champion every single year.
Yeah.
Like, you can't satisfy 20 superstars.
Yeah.
Or superstar. Like, you can't satisfy two full all-star rosters of guys, all who wants to win a ring. You can put them in the best situation possible on certain teams, sure, but that's it. Like, you can't, there is not a situation out there that's realistic that guarantees Damian Lillard a finals berth next year.
No, not guarantees, no. Right. Increases his chances, definitely.
But, absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about that. Like, Denver, for example?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If
Murray and what?
Michael Porter. You have to include both.
So the primary two will be Jokic and Lillard, which instantaneously becomes the best duo in the NBA. Sorry, LeBron and AD, but just in terms of playing style, that would be the best, like, from a strategic point of view, would be the best duo in the entire league. And then from there you have Gordon,
Will what Barton, else? If you re-sign him.
Yeah, if Will Barton, if you... That's true. Monte Morris is still locked up, so that's something.
I mean, like, I think Denver would try to make it one of Murray or Michael Porter and not both. But Murray, given the injury that he's coming off of, makes it a lot more difficult to take Michael Porter out of that. Maybe Portland doesn't want to pay for Michael Porter's next deal. Maybe they say, Okay, well, instead of Porter, we'll take Murray, Gordon, we'll take Monte Morris as well, and we'll take every pick you want.
Or they reroute. I mean, the rerouting thing is real. Like, yeah. A team will reroute players that, like, they might ask for Murray and the trade value of Michael Porter. And yeah. Say, we may not want Michael Porter, but we know he has more trade value than Aaron Gordon. So those are the two guys that we, in quotation mark here, want, but we're going to reroute MPJ somewhere else and get draft picks, for example.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. What team in the lottery will trade their pick from MPJ this year?
Toronto should consider it.
Oh, Toronto. That would be fun.
Yeah.
That's the fourth overall pick. So if you get Jamal Murray and the fourth overall pick, plus, you know, a series of draft pick from Denver's own stock, if they even have, I don't even know their draft pick situation.
Well, that's what I was about to bring up. They owe a lot of protected pick to OKC in 2023. It stayed, if it doesn't convey, it stays. Lotto protected 24, 25. If it doesn't convey by 25, it's 2 second rounders. And then they owe their 2025 pick, or at least whenever the OKC pick conveys, they owe a top five protected pick to Orlando. So they are out. They can trade this year's pick. They can't trade 22, 24, 26, and they can't trade 27 unless they get the protections removed on both of them. So they are very limited in terms of what picks they can offer, and I think that's where this deal falls short.
Unless, of course, that you reroute MPJ for a draft package of some sort.
Yeah, like maybe you can get Orlando to give you both 5 and 8, something like that.
For MPJ, yeah. Hell, that could work. I mean, you would have to have insane faith in that Jamal Murray is going to return 100% to what he used to be.
And you'd have to value five. I mean, because there's what we talked about with Wass a few episodes ago. There's a clear top four. So if you get number four from Toronto, you know, that would work. But if you don't, if you're doing Denver and you're not getting number four, you get number five instead. Like, do you have the same faith in Kuminga or Barnes that you do in whoever falls in the Green Mobley Suggs tier? Like, can that guy be...
Right.
Can Jonathan Kuminga be the best player on a rebuilding team? On a good rebuilding team, I should say?
No, I don't think so, but... No, you're right. I mean, the top four, after the post-top four, that's where it drops off, which actually does make the number four selection from Toronto... probably more valuable than 5-8 in some respects.
Yeah, combined,
even though you do get two bites of the apple, though.
Yeah, but it sounds like... I mean, what Wass was saying was, you know, that top four is so set, and then it just seems like, you know, it seems like Barnes and Kuminga, most evaluators have them 5-6 in some order. Maybe there's, you know, maybe one of them falls to 7, but... Like, they are clearly in a tier right below these other guys. But then it sounds like from 8 to 14, it's just like, they're all about the same. Like, the value you're getting at 8 might not be significantly more than what you're getting at 14.
Just draft Sengun at 5, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
No, but, I mean, so I'm curious as to your point of view, because aren't you also a little bit tired whenever we hear about, you know, stars getting traded? It's always the same teams brought up. It's always the Lakers, Miami. It's like, I would just like to see a team come out of nowhere with a strong offer.
Well, I don't know. Just like, what can the Lakers offer? Like,
they can't. It's just like, that's the thing. They can't. It's still the team that's get regurgitated every single time, right?
Right.
The Knicks too. Like, what? What can the Knicks possibly offer? I get RJ Barrett is good, but is he a centerpiece of a big-ass trade for a superstar like Dean?
Right. I mean, the Knicks can offer... They have the Dallas pick this year, the top 10 protected Dallas pick, and then, their own picks. It doesn't look like they owe any of their own picks, so they have all of their own picks. They can do Barrett. They can do Kevin Knox, Toppin, Quickly. Mitchell Robinson, if they pick up his team option. But again, where does that leave that? Like, they have cap space, and they have to worry about salary matching, so they could have Julius Randle, don't love Dame. But
yeah, but I don't love that deal for Portland though.
Yeah, I mean, Knox does nothing for me. Knox does right. not have significant.
He does value. Nothing for New York either.
Fair point. Toppin is worth a flyer, but I don't think who do you think has more trade value in a vacuum right now, Quickly or Toppin?
Oh, it should be Quickly.
That would be my guess as well. I mean, both of them would be going in this deal. It's irrelevant for the purposes mm-hmm. here, but I don't see a way if you're in New York that you don't give up RJ Barrett, because I agree there's Quickly, Toppin in every pick under the sun. Some team can come over the top and beat that.
Right.
And Miami, okay. Tyler Hero might not be off limits anymore. I don't know. He was for James Harden, but maybe they've finally seen the light. So cool. Tyler Hero, Precious Achiuwa, KZ Okpala. Okay, great. Negotiate a sign and trade with Kendrick Nunn. You're probably going to try to keep Duncan Robinson. They don't want to give up Bam or Jimmy, but they also owe, I think they're out a couple first rounders as well, right? Yeah, they're out this year.
Yeah.
They have a swap going to Houston next year. Lotto protected 23 to OKC as well. All of their second rounders are gone. So Miami's out of picks. The Lakers traded everything for Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, right. and KCP, and whatever few remaining picks they have. That's not going to do anything for Portland. So,
I hate to bring up a big market, but one team that's also being brought up a lot, Golden State, because yep. they have those. I just don't know if Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, and the seven
and 14. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that does anything.
It shouldn't.
Right? No, it's not for Dame, at least. It can do something.
Right.
I don't think he can do Dame.
Yeah. So let's...
sure, you can add in Jordan Poole, who's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
but...
sure. I mean, they have some intriguing young guys, but none of them move the needle for...
Yeah, no.
The most common thing that we will hear is Philly, just because Ben Simmons is so widely available. Do you think they can actually assemble a competitive offer for Damian Lillard?
I want them to, because about 3 years ago on this very podcast, I actually said I would rather see Damian Lillard in Philly over Ben Simmons to pair with Joel Embiid. And I don't remember your reaction. I don't remember if you were supportive or you just called me unrealistic or whatever. But I just want to see that happen so I can add light years to my Twitter name.
I think I said at the time that neither team would do it. But now I think one team would and one team maybe would.
Mm-hmm.
Philly, absolutely. Ben Simmons is widely available. And, given the names being discussed in
right.
conjunction with him... Yes, they would give up Ben Simmons for Dame. They tried to for James Harden. They would absolutely do it for Dame. And they have most of their own picks. They owe top six protected to OKC in 2025 from the Al Horford trade. But otherwise, they have all of their own picks. So they can trade. I mean, it's 28 this year. But they can trade 2023, 2027. They can do picks ops in 22, 24, 26. They have Matisse Thybulle. They have Shake Milton. They have Tyrese Maxey. They have G League MVP, Paul Reed. So, they have some intriguing young guys. They have picks. They have Ben as a centerpiece. Or you can either trade Ben right to Portland if Neil is
right.
I want to pretend that we're going to compete for the playoff spot, but really we're going to win 28 games. Ben Simmons is perfect. Or you can do a three-team deal where you trade Ben somewhere else. The assets that you get for Ben, you reroute to Portland, and then you also send Maxey and whatever that and all the picks that way. So
let's bring back New York into the equation.
Okay.
For Ben Simmons specifically.
Sure. Okay.
What would the Knicks give up for Ben Simmons that would then be rerouted to Portland?
Oof. they would not be on my they would not be the first team I would call if I'm Philly to get assets. I would call Minnesota probably first and then Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think. Yeah. I don't know what. I don't know why the Knicks would want Ben Simmons in the first place.
Because they want a point guard, and maybe that's and oh, Tom Thibodeau.
He's not a point. Ben Simmons is not a, like he and Julius Randle would be such a bad fit together.
I'm just saying Tom Thibodeau loves his defense, and Ben Simmons under Tom Thibodeau would be very much a well, he would be up to par. Let's just put it that way.
That it might be, yeah, and. I mean, Minnesota, too. It's like, who, if they're not going to trade Anthony Edwards, and
which they won't for Ben Simmons. They might for Dame Lillard.
Right. But then a Dame D'Angelo Russell backcourt.
Oh, God.
With Karl Anthony Towns in the middle. Your defense, they're the peak. They would never get higher than 28th in defensive rating.
Yeah, I actually kind of think about it now. I wouldn't mind. That's all out offense. That's the team that averages 130 in the regular season.
Maybe fun as hell to watch, but
yeah.
So I mean, I think that's the idea. If Portland doesn't want Ben, I think you could send him to one of these other teams that have expressed interest. But I mean, if Minnesota is not willing to give up Edwards, does Malik Beasley, Jarrett Culver, Josh Okogie, Jaden McDaniels, who is good, but
yeah.
Yeah, and then multiple picks as well, plus what Philly sent picks wise and Maxi.
That's the picks is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And that's, oh, by the way, that's also why I brought up New York. My apologies for not presenting it all throughout.
Oh.
Because you wouldn't have to take back contracts necessarily.
Right.
The Knicks have a ton of cap space that could absorb Ben Simmons immediately, which means you wouldn't have to take on like a lot of money in Portland. You would just basically tell New York, look, we don't care about guys, like established guys. We will take Emmanuel quickly. Like, we'll take Obi Toppin, for example. Quickly and Toppin, and then a lot of your draft picks for Ben Simmons. Like, so let's say Philly gives up all the picks that you talked about, right?
Yep.
And then you reroute Ben to a place that has a lot of draft picks, and then those are rerouted to Portland. What could Portland end up with? Like, 7 or 8 draft picks?
Yeah, well, picks plus pick swaps, probably even more.
Oh, my.
I mean,
that's what I'd be looking at.
Yeah, I think Philly would have to send the 3 firsts and 3 pick swaps.
Yeah. And then whatever you can get for Ben in terms of draft picks, which are then rerouted to Portland.
Right.
Under the assumption that the Blazers are fully aware that this is a full-on rebuild.
Yes, which I don't know would be the case, but...
Right. Could you sell that to the Portland fan base without getting a name back? Oh, of course, like you... If there's a pick included in this year's draft, you would
get a name back this year,
of course. That's fair.
Well, that's what I'm worried about with Olshay. Like, would he prefer to get Ben Simmons back because you could
because
sell...
Because it's a name?
Yeah.
I will never understand GMs who operate under that, like the whole, like I bring it up because it's relevant because that we know that there's this history of executives that think in terms of PR and names, and sometimes it's ownership telling them get a name back. I will never understand NBA franchises who insist on thinking in that capacity. Like if the best deal you can get back is like raw draft picks, go for it. Like why not? If it's the best package. I think that is the framework right there. Him to Philly give up Ben somewhere else, they attach a ton of draft picks for Dame, and then the rerouting. That could work.
I think Philly, if Portland does decide to quietly shop Dame, listen to Dame offers,
right,
Maury's gonna be on the phone. And they can at least present a package. And I wrote at Forbes yesterday how all of this stuff with Dame now kind of coming to the surface should make Philly even more reluctant to trade Ben until we see what happens with Dame. Because the last thing you want to do is trade for the Sexton Love poo-poo package. And then... all of a sudden...
That's not fair. Sexton is good.
I know. But like, Kevin Love is not, and he's makes no sense on this team. But you don't want to trade for that, and then 3 months later, Damian Lillard becomes available, and you're like, ah, well, damn. Like, we could have had Damian Lillard, but instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me if, and this is what I've been saying all along, honestly. I mean, I wrote something for Fansided a couple weeks ago where I said this as well, where knowing all the stuff that was happening with Dame, at least, you know, seeming more frustrated than usual, because he had an interview a couple weeks ago with Haynes during the coaching search where he seemed just like a little more out on Portland than he ever had before. And then,
right,
I hate to bring up LaVine, but, you know, again, just you don't know what's happening with him. If he renegotiates extends in the next couple weeks, all right, he's off the table. But if not, he's a free agent 2022. You at least have to, you know, get a sense of where that market is. And then Bradley Beal, mm-hmm. too. I mean, there was an article from The Athletic in March. It was Jason Quick and Fred Katz about how Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal are, like, connected. They, every time they go play each other, they connect after the game for a couple minutes because they view themselves as counter to this super team trend. They, you know, they are staying loyal to their respected franchises.
So they should pair up to become a super team.
Well, if Bradley Beal sees what's going on with Dame in Portland, Bradley Beal is a free agent in 2022. So he has control. I mean, Dame's under contract for at least 3 more years. But Beal has control over his future. Maybe he sees, oh, well, what happened here? Like, Dame, you swore you were so loyal to the Blazers. What? Should I reevaluate my future now? And then I'll...
Yes. Yes, you should. Yes.
Right. But then again, like, Philly could come in and be like, oh, hello. We have Ben Simmons. Would you like to be... Would you be interested in him, or would you be interested in the picks that we can get for him? Like, how can we facilitate Bradley Beal coming to Philadelphia? So...
By the way, even if Zach LaVine leaves Chicago, I still wouldn't do the Ben Simmons thing.
Yeah. I don't blame you. But again, if you could reroute him to Minnesota and Minnesota can send you you know... I think there are multi-team packages where every team can get what they want, even if it's not the team sending out the star gets Ben Simmons in return.
Right. By the way, I just want to shout out Stefan Noe, formerly of The Athletic. He actually did a piece detailing how it would be possible for the Bulls to not only sign Lonzo Ball, but also renegotiate and extend Zach LaVine, which was very, very interesting, because that opportunity is actually feasible with some recent development into Zach's view of Thaddeus Young. So go check out Stefan Noe, N-O-H, at Twitter.
So I have two wildcard teams before we get going in terms of, again, I don't know.
Are you going to beat my wildcard Hornets?
In terms of realism, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if these teams...
Oh, thank you. Wow.
Well, I don't know if these teams would, one of them at least, would see themselves on this timeline to, again, where the Hornets, like, should just be happy with LaMelo and ride this thing out. But the Pelicans, given all the stuff with Zion this offseason, where there's already some smoke about him being unhappy, the Pelicans have a ton of draft picks. From the Jrue Holiday trade, from the Anthony Davis trade, you're not giving up Zion, because the entire point is to pair Zion and Dame. Would you give up Brandon Ingram?
If push came to shove, I probably would. I would probably feel forced to.
Yeah. Honestly.
But I will say this. There's a reason that I don't want to split up Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum in Boston, because I think that is a long-term duo that play, you know, two wing positions, which we've seen in the NBA is so key.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very close to sharing that same opinion of Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, knowing full well that Zion isn't a wing, but he is... He's a basketball player. I don't know what the hell he is as a position. Like, he starts at the four, but he's fluid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Ingram, to me, remains one of the most underappreciated players in the NBA. He really does. I understand that he didn't make the All-Star team this year. I understand that he isn't Zion. But I almost think that Sion's presence is working against him a little bit, because it's just Sion is so ridiculously good at that age that when you put it into contrast of Ingram, you just go, well, Ingram is sort of nice, I suppose. No, he's really good. I mean, I would try my damnedest if I'm New Orleans to keep Ingram around and then just tell Portland, look, we have Steven Adams, we have Eric Bledsoe, which are the crap contracts you need to match this thing. Take every pick you want.
Yeah.
Take every young guy you want. Jackson Hayes, Kyra Lewis, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Fleece us. That's fine. Ravage us. It's fine.
Right.
And just leave us B.I., Sion, and Dane.
Yeah.
We're good.
Right? I mean, that's at least... If you're Portland and you are approaching this from the perspective of we don't want win now guys back, we are fine doing a hard reset. New Orleans can put together a pretty interesting offer.
They can.
Like, if you're not including Brandon Ingram, you can't beat Philly's Ben Simmons offer if Portland wants to stay somewhat competitive. But if they don't care about that, then the Ben Simmons offer doesn't do as much for them, and all of a sudden New Orleans is probably in the lead.
Yeah. Well, it should be noted that Brandon Ingram is only 23 years old, and he'll be 24 by start of the next season. So he's still someone you can build around. I mean, that shouldn't be forgotten in the grand context of things, of course. But I would definitely make a concerted effort if I'm New Orleans in trying to retain Ingram, because he's such a valuable piece. Can you imagine just him basically feasting off of the attention that Dame and Sion get in pick and rolls?
Yeah. Maybe the three of them together could be really, really good.
That could be a finals team. I'm not even trying to be cute when I say that. I mean, that could be guys, ring chasers could come after that team. Like, we'll sign them in. Sure.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, we'll get there. That's a low key finals team right there. Just offensively speaking, they could be so potent.
Yeah, and I mean, beyond all of their own first round picks, the Pelicans have 22 and 24 firsts from the Lakers, 25, 27 from Milwaukee. A 2023 first round swap with the Lakers, 2024 first round swap with Milwaukee, 2026 first round swap with Milwaukee.
Oh, what's the latest they had with the Lakers? 2023?
24, but they could choose 25 instead.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because LeBron's going to be
A
lot older than AD.
Hell, even AD's going to be past 30 at that point.
Yeah.
And if they do lock up Dennis Schroeder to like 20 plus million a year and lose that cap flexibility moving forward, the Lakers could be awful by then. Awful.
Yeah, by 25 especially, yeah.
Yeah.
It comes down to if you're Portland, can you wait it out that long if that's like one of your main prizes from this trade?
Right.
But
that's the discussion. They should think long term.
Right. So my other wild card team is Indiana. Just because they have so many guys on these medium sized contracts, it'd be really easy for salary matching purposes to come up with a trade.
Yeah.
So what if you do? I mean, I think Sabonis would have to be the one going out.
Right, for sure.
But Sabonis, LeVert, or Sabonis and Brogdon, and just every pick.
And then you can reroute Brogdon and Sabonis.
Yeah, or, I mean, Sabonis is young enough, right?
Well, he's 25, but he's a year older than Brandon Ingram. So if we're applying the logic of Ingram being a win now player,
yeah,
you could make the argument Sabonis is the same. But I catch your drift. And plus, Sabonis is on a cheap ass contract, so he would be very attractive in the trade market for teams.
Yeah, for three more years.
So if you were to reroute him, you would get a ton of value back.
Yeah, I would think so. It looks like, Indiana has all of its first-round picks moving forward.
So Dame would take Brogdon's spot. You would keep Turner. You could just slide T.J. Warren into the four as that bubble scorer. You would still have LeVert, possibly. Yeah, because if you trade Brogdon, Sabonis, yeah. You would have LeVert feasting off that attention. Maybe you actually re-sign Doug because he would make sense on that team now. You mm-hmm. still have Jeremy Lamb coming off the bench.
You have the Holiday
Justin
Brothers.
Holiday. Yeah. Maybe you even re-sign C.J. McConnell as Dame's backup point guard, which would be...
And they have 13 this year, right? The number 13 pick? Yeah.
Yeah.
So not, you know, not number four, but still a lottery pick.
No, so they still get a lottery pick. Right, right. Yeah. So they get the pick this year, picks in the future, and then whatever they get if they decide to reroute, you know, Sabonis and Brogdon.
Right.
Like, Brogdon could reroute Brogdon to Philly.
Yeah.
In a larger Ben Simmons trade, for example.
All for well. That. Please, God.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you could do so many things here. I love that idea. Plus, this is what I'm talking about, because the Pacers are not going to be on Dame's list. Like, let's not kid ourselves. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I like. A team that isn't really associated with getting these guys who comes in out of nowhere and goes, you know what? Damn it, we're in play.
Yeah.
We want this guy, too. We're not just going to sit there and go, please, sir, can I have some more porridge after guys have gone to the big markets? No, I want the small markets to come in and say, F you, two of our representations are in the NBA Finals right now. Screw everybody. We're here.
Yeah.
I want that.
Yeah. And like, the Pacers are very much in need of a consolidation trade or just to shake things up. But a lineup with Warren and Turner is your front court. Dame.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I'm Indiana, I'm saying you take Sabonis because we think he has the highest trade value. And,
yeah,
you know, fine. We can live with a Warren Turner front court anyway. And then take your pick of Brogdon or LeVert. We don't.
Right.
Either
right,
one.
Right, yeah.
Like, whichever one you prefer. That's fine. Because a Lillard-Brogdon would actually fit pretty well together.
That would fit even better.
Yeah. Like, right. If I'm Indiana, I probably prefer giving up Sabonis and LeVert. But.
Of course, but you don't know. You give them their choice.
Right,
of course.
Right. But, I mean, I don't know. I think Indiana could at least cobble together an offer that should make Portland think.
I would agree. And who would not love Sabonis? Who would not in the NBA be interested in trading for Sabonis at that age and that contract?
Does Nate Duncan run an NBA team yet?
Let's hope not.
Whichever team he is working for, that team would not want Sabonis. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, most teams...
Hi, Nate, would you like a good player? No!
But, I mean, otherwise, like, yes, he's on $19.8 million for the next 2 years, $20.7 in 23-24. Yeah. He's young, he's productive. So even if Portland wants to pretend to contend for... Or not contend, but, like, stay relevant for a little while, all right, keep Sabonis for a year. Or, as you said, reroute him elsewhere and get even more for him. But,
yeah.
I don't know. And then Dame still coming to the East, still coming to a team that has talent. Like,
a team that could be loaded, man.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
They're only giving up two rotation players.
Right. I don't know that they beat Brooklyn or Milwaukee, but they're at least, like, not a fringe playoff team if they stay healthy.
I mean, again, when you look at it, it's two starters that go out. And it's replaced on the court. Like, because one thing is, draft picks is basically a currency.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of on-court value, you are taking an all-star big, and depending on it's LeVert or Brogdon, of course, Brogdon is an all-star caliber player, so that matters. But you're getting an MVP caliber player back.
Right.
And that is, like, that's worth it. That upgrade is just that much. That's the toughest thing in the NBA. It's to get a star to go from star to superstar. This trade does that. You get that one tier one clear cut superstar guy in.
Yeah.
And you only relinquish two players.
Yeah.
That's the on-court product would be insane because you can keep Doug, you can keep T.J. McConnell, you can actually go out and even hell. Like, the non-tax MLE, right?
Yeah, they should.
Boom. That's another almost $10 million player per year right there.
Yeah.
And then comes the rings chasers.
Right.
That's not bad, Bri.
Thank you. All right. I feel good.
Yeah.
I feel good about it.
You should.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done. Small mortgage, which I support. And I think you also make Caitlin Cooper very, very happy.
No, she hates these fake trade rumors, so we'll definitely tag her. We'll say post this. All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap up. Thank you all, as always, for listening. I'm sure this is not the last time we will talk about Damian Lillard this offseason. So
no shit.
There will be plenty more of this to come. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, go hit the trade machine. Let's come up with some more Dame packages that we can discuss for the next 3 weeks, because that's all anyone's going to be talking about.
I mean, we solved the Ben Simmons conundrum on our YouTube special.
Yeah.
So maybe we should come up with a way of solving the Dame Lillard conundrum on another YouTube video at some point.
I like that all of our solutions just involve Indiana blowing up their team.
What gives that look? If Indiana might actually be the team that makes the whole league go around.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Later, Mort.
Later.